For the indignity and degradation thus inflicted on a proud people, we say sorry.
The past is the past, and no matter how hard we try, we cannot change that history. But let's start to undo the wrongs with what is right and just.
Today on RN Drive, we're continuing our series on Indigenous Australians called Behind the Gap.
Well, the thing is, the gap is beginning to close very slowly, and it's really important that people are committed to staying the course.
In many communities, police regard violence in Aboriginal communities as, quote, quote, it's just blackfellas again.
We want leaders who will convince our people to stop drinking, fighting, feuding, and who will get our kids to school.
The Closing the Gap statement is important because it forces us to stay committed.
Over the next few weeks, we're taking you behind the headlines and exploring some of the reasons behind the gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians. Tonight, our series focuses on the debate around changing the Constitution. The Australian Constitution does not recognise Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders as the nation's first people. Since 2007, there's been a bipartisan commitment to hold a referendum. But despite strong support, there is still no agreement on how that change to the Constitution will look. Some have argued that Indigenous people should be acknowledged in a preamble, and others call for the outlawing of racial discrimination. Tonight is a poly-free zone. Instead, we bring you the voices of Indigenous Australians. Shortly, we'll hear from prominent constitutional recognition advocates Kirsty Parker, Tanya Hosch, and Megan Davis. But first, a historical look at how the Australian Constitution has dealt with Indigenous Australians since Federation. And a warning, our segment includes the voices of deceased Indigenous Australians, including Faith Bandler, a campaigner for the 1967 referendum, who passed away last week. Our guide is Marcia Langton, the Foundation Chair of Australian Indigenous Studies at the University of Melbourne. She was a member of the expert panel that provided a report to the previous Labor government on constitutional change.
We are going.
Saturday may fittingly be called a Day of the Aboriginal, for it is the first occasion on which we, the Australian people, have for many years been called upon to think so seriously about our Aboriginal minority.
With the coming referendum, this should give us some power if we get yes.
Mrs. Bandler, how concerned are you as a New South Wales representative on this delegation over the result, the possible result of the referendum on the Aboriginal question?
I'm deeply concerned. I don't think that we should take it for granted that there will be a yes vote for the Aborigines. There must be, but we're not certain at this particular stage that there will be. And I feel that the time has come when Australia can no longer tolerate legal racial discrimination against its Indigenous people.
Pastor Doug Nicholls, what effect do you think it will have in real terms if you get a yes vote?
Not so much a question of effect, I think it's a matter of democratic right. And we will form a part of the British Commonwealth of Nations, and there should be no legislation set up to discriminate us. Apart from that, I think it gives the government to make laws that could help us, more or less in spending wealth, housing, and we believe that it would give the government more power to expend on Aborigines.
The Constitution was written in the 19th century, and it was written by white colonists, all male. What a lot of people don't know is that the reason why Aboriginal people were excluded from the Constitution, apart from all the usual racism, the technical reason in terms of constructing the Federation had to do with the distribution of taxes by the Commonwealth to the states. So if most of the white colonists lived in Victoria and New South Wales, as they did, then the taxes would be collected from those two states, paid to the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth, under the Constitution, then had the duty to distribute the taxes to all the states on the basis of population. if Aborigines were counted, then South Australia as it was then, which included the Northern Territory, Western Australia and Queensland, had still very large Aboriginal populations and therefore would have received most of the tax distribution from the Commonwealth, which was coming from New South Wales and Victoria. So therefore, they ruled Aborigines out. And so that is why, prior to 1967, the Constitution said that there shall be a census and the people of Australia shall be counted, except for Aborigines. And that is one of the clauses that the 1967 referendum changed.
Vote yes for Aborigines, they want to be Australians too. Vote yes and give them rights and freedoms just like me and you. Vote yes for Aborigines. Vote yes.
The result of the referendum on the Aboriginal question was a resounding triumph for the Aboriginal cause. Australia recorded a yes vote of nearly 91%. Yes,
all the more significant. Well, it achieved the removal of except for Aborigines in the census clause, and then there was another provision, section 51.26, the Commonwealth shall have power to make laws except for Aborigines. And so the except for Aborigines was also removed by the 1967 referendum question. So therefore the outcome was that for the first time Aborigines were counted in the census. And secondly, the Commonwealth had the power to make laws for Aboriginal people. Prior to that, it did not. All laws for Aborigines were under the states, were made by the state governments, by the state parliaments. Because the Constitution excluded Indigenous people, Aboriginal people, which included Torres Strait Islanders, until 1967. The Aboriginal presence in the Constitution is by default. So we weren't really included in the Constitution. The exclusions were removed. So we're there, but we're not there, if you know what I mean.
It's not a firm commitment, but Tony Abbott says 2017 might be the best year to hold the referendum to recognise the first Australians in the Constitution.
Now, I am prepared to sweat blood on this. This is at least as important as any of the other causes that this government has been prepared to take on. I want this to happen. I want this to happen as quickly as it can.
I think that the arguments put by Noel Pearson are very persuasive, and that is we have an opportunity to change the Constitution to complete the Commonwealth, is the phrase that he uses, to base Australia on three pillars, the British tradition, you know, the Westminster tradition and all that comes with it, the multicultural nature of our society, and the foundation of the First Peoples being here long before anybody else came. By recognising Indigenous people, we put that foundation into the Constitution. Indigenous people exist. We overcome the hangover of Terra Nullius. And the Constitution then is absolutely clear that we do, in fact, exist in the nation state. It has to do with the legacy that we all leave to our children. And Rachel Perkins put this best at the Recognise Gala dinner in Sydney recently. She said that we must not leave the burden of history to our children. If our children inherit the bitterness and conflict of our history, we're leaving them a terrible legacy. The constitutional change that we're asking for will leave them with a much happier legacy that will make them feel proud to be Australian. It will remove the reason for the alienation, distrust, and even hatred amongst Aboriginal people in relation to what happened to our people in history. And it will make non-Indigenous Australians feel proud to be Australian because the nation state recognises the First Peoples. Now, it's really quite naive to expect a constitutional change to overcome poverty. That is ridiculous. But what it can do is establish a standard. So let's look, for instance, at some traditions of discrimination in the state jurisdictions, where because under various statutes and under the native title regime, Aboriginal people have titles, the states often refuse to provide any services at all to people living on those lands. And you can see that that's happening in Western Australia right now, with Barnett refusing to fund essential services to over 500 communities. These problems are persistent, and it's one of the reasons for the terrible health outcomes for Aboriginal people. If the Constitution's very clear, then the states are less likely to discriminate against us. So there are very practical reasons for our recognition, because there is far too much bush lawyer interpretation of whether or not we're entitled to, say, for instance, essential services, which are paid for by tax, distributed by the Commonwealth through the Grants Commission to the states and then to the local governments, but in insufficient amounts to Aboriginal local councils to provide essential services. So this would be the hook on which other legislation and policies could hang to clear up this historical mess of inequity.
That was Marcia Langton, the Foundation Chair of Australian Indigenous Studies at the University of Melbourne. The federal government has funded a campaign to raise the profile of the movement to change the constitution. Tanya Hosch has been building support for Recognise, the movement pushing for constitutional change. I spoke to her earlier this week.
Thanks, Patricia.
Why do you feel constitutional recognition of Indigenous Australians is so important?
It's critically important because the Constitution, whether people spend much time reading it or not, represents the legal framework for the country. And at the moment, it's silent about the first Australians, the long, impressive history and that part of the history of the country. And this is a rare opportunity that we don't get too often to change the Constitution, to make sure that the place of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people can be properly recognised. And it's also an opportunity to deal with the racial discrimination that currently exists in the document. Now, obviously, changing the Constitution is not something that's undertaken lightly. It requires the goodwill and drive of a great number of Australians, and it really is required to be a very positive stepping forward for the country to really bring that document up to date with the Australia that we say we are today.
After it was announced, I put it on Twitter that I was going to be having this panel discussion and speaking to individuals about constitutional recognition. It became really apparent to me that there's a great deal of division within the Indigenous community about the issue of constitutional recognition. There are some people saying that this change isn't necessary. There are others saying that it will never go far enough, that it's just symbolic. How do you get Aboriginal people on side? Because without Aboriginal people on side, there's really no point.
Well, I guess I wouldn't agree that there's a great amount of dissent about the issue, but of course there are going to be wide-ranging opinions about it. We're really confident from the work that I think came through very strongly through the expert panel's consultations and the expert panel report and the daily conversations that we've been having, and I'm approaching almost 3 years with Recognise now, having conversations with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people every day about this. We're really confident that the vast majority of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are in support of this. But of course, while we still don't have a final set of words for people to talk about, people are, you know, still contemplating a whole range of issues in the context of the difference between the intent to do something very positive in the Australian Constitution and exactly what the detail of that will be.
On a really personal level, Tanya, what does this mean to you as an Indigenous woman? How would it change your life?
One of the things that I've been very moved by since I started in this role is that this is part of carrying on an important piece of work that began well before 1967 that helped deliver the success of the 67 referendum. But in essence, what it really means is that, and I hear this a lot, that one Saturday morning, all voting Australians have got the opportunity to go out and cast a vote. And what they'll be voting for if we have a successful referendum is to acknowledge that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have always been here. And that matters, and it's something that we want to acknowledge and celebrate. And when I talk to campaigners from 1967, you know, they have often said to me, look, we didn't even know the great byproducts that would come from the success of 1967, but there were many. The mood of the nation changed. People were able to have a new series of conversations about what it meant to be a first Australian in Australia today. I think that is a remarkable opportunity for us as a country, and I think it has the potential to really create a new framework for us as Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians.
Tanya, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Patricia.
And that was recognised campaign co-director Tanya Hosch. And joining me now in the studio for a discussion are two women central to the debate. Kirsty Parker is co-chairwoman of the Close the Gap Campaign Steering Committee and also co-chairwoman of the National Congress of Australia's First People, the representative body for Indigenous Australians. She joins me from Sydney with Professor Megan Davis, the director of the Indigenous Law Centre at the University of New South Wales. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia.
First to you, Megan. Do we now need a compromise deal that deals with the concerns of conservative Australia, people like Tony Abbott, and also satisfies the demands of Indigenous Australia? Do we need a third way that's different to the recommendations of the expert panel that you were a member of?
Maybe, Patricia, but I think first things first, and that is there hasn't been enough public discussion about a non-discrimination clause, which is what you're getting at. It's just not enough to imply to the Australian population that conservatives or conservative constitutional lawyers won't support Section 116A, because we know that the Australian people are the ones that change the constitution. And I think that if you have really legitimate reasons as to why you don't want that in the constitution, then you have to spell it out for the Australian people. And it might be just simply that, as has been the tradition in Australia, having a right in the constitution might be exhibiting a distrust of the democratic process, and that you prefer to place your trust in parliament. But in addition to that, we need to have broader conversations about things such as politicians do not want to constrain their own power, or that maybe it's self-interest wrapped up as conservatism or as, you know, democratic champions. I think we need to have that discussion. Do politicians still want the power to discriminate against people on the basis of race? These kinds of discussions haven't been ventilated yet in the Australian public. So while, yes, I do think there might be a third model that could deal with conservative objections to Section 116A,
which is the racial saying that racial discrimination is illegal. That was the proposal.
Yes,
that's right.
For those who don't know, I don't think there's been sufficient debate in the Australian community about that yet for people to give up Section 116A. Because I actually think, in particular, and Kirsty can talk more to this, but the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community still think that the expert panel recommendations are in play.
Well, that's it, Kirsty. I do want to go to you on this. There are Aboriginal people who want racial discrimination to be outlawed in the constitution, which is the proposal we were just talking about, and others who are happy with a compromise deal. Noel Pearson, Cape York leader, being one of the most well-known now. He was in favour of this non-discrimination racial clause, and he's now backed down from that, saying he just doesn't see how conservatives will ever sign up to it. Where is the majority view on from Aboriginal Australia on this? Is there a movement towards some compromise deal?
Well, I think people are hungering for a real discussion about these issues. And of course, this is a debate that has been going on in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community since the expert panel was convened. They, of course, reported to the Gillard government in January 2012. We have yet to see a formal response to the expert panel's recommendations from either that government, the current government, and so forth. There is certainly a considerable amount of heat in this discussion for our people, and that will be so while we don't feel that there has been, you know, an opportunity for us to have these sorts of conversations. I also want to go back to your point about, you know, what sort of support is there amongst Aboriginal people for a non-discrimination provision in the Australian Constitution. I think you can go further back from that and look at the response of submissions to the expert panel itself, which of course spoke to thousands of Australians. And I think about 80% of people said they did not have a problem with what was ultimately proposed by the expert panel. So people were very relaxed and comfortable with outlawing discrimination in the Australian Constitution.
That might be true, but the problem is, isn't it, and I think you both sort of concede this on some level, that we all know that referendums are very difficult to pass. You need the majority of states, you need conservatives not to run a no case, with Marcia Langton's been on the record arguing this too. If they're going to run a no case, then it would be dispiriting, wouldn't it, for Aboriginal people to have this go down?
It would be dispiriting, and I have to say we have expressed concern that there are senior leaders, including the Prime Minister, Mr Abbott, when he was in opposition, and since the coalition government came to power, saying if you are looking for non-discrimination in this, it's going to be very difficult and I think we should be looking elsewhere. We just think it is far too early to be basically smashing what is a very legitimate concern. And I have to say that everyone in this, the expert panel, the current Joint Select Committee looking into these matters, have said this has to be something that Aboriginal people, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, support. And we have been very clear to say that we do not feel protected currently from discrimination, and we would like that sort of protection and that sort of assurance in our national document.
Megan, are you confident that the Prime Minister, who's now promised that he wants to sweat blood on this, to make the point that he's very passionate about this as a Conservative Prime Minister, everyone's been really concerned about the date. You don't think the date's as important as some people, including myself. I'll put myself in that think that the date is important and that you need to, you know, get the momentum that currently exists to make this happen.
I just gave a speech saying this is the Bride Wars principle, the Anne Hathaway movie. Set the date. I think we should set the model first. I think never in the history of Australian referendums have we asked a government to set a date before we have a robust public discussion on what the model might look like, or what the question might be, and certainly not engage the subjects of that recognition, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, in that conversation. So I'm not so concerned about set the date. I think Gillard was wise to delay. I think Abbott takes it really seriously. I think he was correct to be cautious. This is constitutional design. He knows that if it's just symbolism, if it's just three lines at the beginning of the Constitution, Prime Minister Abbott knows that that will not get the support of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So I think he's moving at the right pace. I think the kind of impatience or impetus for a date is because we have a campaign arm recognised who are out there in the community and building community consensus around the notion of recognition. It just might take a bit longer. It's a very, very complex thing, and this doesn't start with just John Howard or the 99 referendum for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. We see this in a trajectory of our political and legal history from first contact to now. So we do see it through a prism of truth and justice. This is not just about symbolic recognition. And I think 5126 was a really powerful, that was a head of power in a constitution. If we were to now just have recognition, particularly when many in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community feel like that's what the High Court did in Mabo, I think we would lose the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population if we didn't have something more concrete.
I'm with two guests, Kirsty Parker, who's the chairwoman of the Close the Gap campaign and also the National Congress of Australia's First People, and Professor Megan Davis, the Director of Indigenous Law at the University of New South Wales, who was just talking there. Kirsty, many Aboriginal people wouldn't be happy unless there was a treaty, really. I hear this from a lot of Aboriginal people. Without a treaty, this is all meaningless. Is this true?
It would depend if you were of the view that you cannot have both. And this is constantly a position that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are put in. Either you like this and you're all for this, or this is to be abandoned. When in fact, there are lots of discussions taking place in our community at the moment where people are saying, and I also just want to pick up on something that you said in your introduction when you introduced myself and Megan can of course speak for herself, and you said, a passionate advocate of recognition of our people in the Constitution. I'm a passionate advocate of meaningful recognition of our people and our rights, and that's very important. I am strongly opposed to the merely symbolic. Our membership of Congress, which, you know, obviously numbers in the thousands and has amongst its membership peak bodies across this Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community, we do want this to mean something. This cannot be just about mainstream Australians feeling good about themselves. And I have to say, I just have quite an amount of confidence in many non-Indigenous Australians who say, yeah, I want this to actually matter and we need to be brave and go as far as we possibly can. There are discussions, and the expert panel obviously considered the issue of sovereignty and a treaty. They resolved that this, and the expert panel was tasked with finding a, coming up with recommendations that they believe could inform a referendum that would get the majority of Australians on board. And Megan, of course, can talk more to this. They felt that the issue of sovereignty and treaty could not be backed by the majority of Australians, who will feel a level of discomfort about these discussions. That does not mean that we then shelve them permanently, because these are very live issues in the community. You know, the majority of our members have nominated sovereignty as one of the top three issues that are confronting our people, so it continues to be important.
On RN Drive, I'd like to hear your views on constitutional recognition of Indigenous Australians. 0418 226 576. I've got to be honest, I've only got a couple of minutes left, but this series does go on for another 2 weeks on other themes, and certainly I'm so glad we're having this conversation. I want to ask one question that I'd like both of you to answer in turn. I'll start with you, Megan. What happens next in your view? I know there's committees to report in the parliamentary cycle, but does, in your view, Bill Shorten and Tony Abbott need to get together with Aboriginal people leadership and kind of knock something together? I know that sounds crude, but I am crude. Is that kind of the way we need to move forward? How do you move this along? It's just so frustrating. Since 2007, this has been a commitment, but we're not seeing much progress.
Well, I think we move it forward by having these kinds of conversations where we can ventilate these issues. I actually think treaty sovereignty is proxy for power and powerlessness. So I actually think that third model might be something that we can look at in terms of addressing the democratic deficit for Indigenous peoples. But we need to take serious and not disparage. I'm not saying you are, but I know there are people out in that space disparaging and demeaning Aboriginal arguments for treaty and sovereignty. But these are a part of our unfinished business. And I think where we're going from here is we need to lay down a process for what that looks like in the future. And that includes this recognition project, and it's going to include things that follow on behind that. That's why I think this idea for an Australian Declaration of Reconciliation is such a good idea. You need to lay down that process. But you do that by, I actually think we need to re-engage Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in the space. And I think Noel, Marcia, a number of us have been advocating Aboriginal conventions by which we can have that robust discussion amongst themselves. But we need more political engagement with the reports of the Joint Select Committee on Constitutional Recognition, as you suggested, both the interim and progress report, for both sides of politics to really, in a detailed fashion, respond to what it is that the committee is saying. And then, as you suggested, with Section 116A, while all the legal and political elites know that perhaps a non-discrimination clause won't fly, that's not the kind of conversation that's going on out in
Absolutely.
The community. So that needs to be laid down.
Thanks, Megan. And Kirsty Parker, just the final word on nutting it out.
Oh, look, the very first thing is that our people must arrive at some sort of consensus about this issue, and we need to be supported to do that. We need to be given the time to do that and the resources to do that. And I will say that I do not believe that that has been adequately addressed so far. We've had a campaign really saying constitutional recognition is important. It's about recognition and reform in actual fact, but there hasn't been an opportunity for us to arrive at some sort of position. And then we talk to, you know, the parliamentary leaders. And I also have to say, you know, we need to maintain the bipartisanship that we have seen in the parliament, not running out right now, you know, this no campaign against non-discrimination, because it is preemptive and I think undersells Australians' courage and appetite for being brave. And also, there has to be an acknowledgement that this does not mean that further conversations around sovereignty and treaty and other forms of agreement making are not valid discussions, because they are.
Thank you so much for your time. Kirsty Parker is the chairwoman of the Close the Gap campaign and also the National Congress of Australia's First People. And Professor Megan Davis is the director of the Indigenous Law Centre at the University of New South Wales. Next week, we have the third instalment of the Behind the Gap series. We're looking at Indigenous employment and education.